हरि ओम चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Text 15, okay, page 36. Therefore, we find in the Prabhaskanda of the Skanda Purana, Brahma, the grandfather of the immortal demigods, in ancient times performed severe penances. And so the Vedas became manifest along with their six supplements, their word for word glosses, and their resequenced texts. Then the entire Purana appeared, unchanging and auspicious. Embodying all scriptures, its eternal sound comprising as many as 1 billion verses. It emanated from Lord Brahma's mouth. Listen to the description of its divisions. So here's a billion verses. So it's a few more than what's available now. Right? I think they say it's 400,000 are the 18 Puranas, as how they were spoken. But the material that's in the Puranas, that is 1 billion verses. Because, in other words, as it is, 18 is way beyond most people's capacity to read anyway. So these are what's going on in the discussions of the acharyas. Right? Does that make sense? Because what it is, all of these are documented elements of the conversations between all the great personalities. Right? And so, therefore, here there's a billion verses. So, in other words, it's a lot. First is the Brahma Purana, Skanda Purana, Prabhaskanda 1, 2, 3 through 5. Here, the figure 1 billion refers to the number of verses current on the planet of Brahma. Right? Because remember, he has the personified Vedas there. So then there's, a few more verses like that. A similar passage from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam starts. Beginning from the front face of Brahma, the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sam, and Atharva, gradually became manifest. It means one from each mouth. So it's an advantage when you get to say a lot in a short time.
Yes.
Srimad Bhagavatam 3.12.37. In that passage, we find this statement, quote, then Brahma, who could see everything, past, present, and future, created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories from all his mouths. Right? So here is when he's saying the Puranas and histories. These Puranas are histories, but they have a certain form, how they're written. So here histories would mean your itihasas. Right? That are about some certain story.
Yes.
Right? From all his mouths. Just like, let's say, when the as we'll see, it's when in the Bhagavatams we go as these great Vidura and Markandeya, Uddhava and others are speaking, then they're telling stories about particular persons, right? Let's say Puranjan, that's an itihas, because it's just about one person, right? But that all these itihasas together, that's a Purana, right? But it also gives emphasis to your Prajapatis, to the primary and secondary creation, and the manas. Well, generally, most itihasas are just about the kings. The kings, great Brahmins, like this. Does that make sense? So, one aspect. But they do touch on all the others, of course. But not as elaborate. And the variety is also great. So that's why the Purana is so, special in that, as far as history goes, it starts before creation, And they take it to the end of Kali Yuga, like that. You know, there'll be more things, but, you know, that's as far as we're, you know, concerned.
Need to know basis.
Yeah, means our kind of, how do you say? You know, our dynastic glory, you know, ends with the end of Kali Yuga. You know, Kalki kind of abruptly ends it. You know, we got to. No hurry, Bowen. We got it. The tribe's got an honorable mention again. Yes.
I was thinking because in Kalki Purana's mention that Kalki will appear after 100,000 years of Kali Yuga, and not on the end. So I was thinking why it is explained there.
It's just, you know, they stick around for a while. You know, that these things aren't, that's not the essential point, yeah. You know. You know, it's just like, you know, there's, let's say, what is it, you know, 23.9 kilos of, let's say, steel in, you know, one of the mag wheels on, you know, a particular car.
Right.
Does it really matter? No, you want to know how, you know, the driving, the comfort, the safety, the mileage, you know, the resale value, all those things. So that's why these things aren't as important. You can get into them. I mean, there's people who knows these things, and they can tell you the advantage, and they have a whole different world, you know, like that. And so then the point is that there are kings now that are alive that are, you know, in these villages up, you know, the kind of, you know, more towards the Himalayas or in the Himalayas, those villages, and they'll be there until the end of Kali Yuga. And then when Satya Yuga starts, they'll start the Sun and Moon dynasties again. Like that. So, you know, there's all kinds of people going on that are around and doing all kinds of stuff. So, you know, just like we were reading that Vyasadeva in these other ages was born in Treta Yuga. Right, and then, you know, but his work is at the end of, I mean, wait a minute. In Dwapara Yuga, you were saying. Yeah, and so then, you know, like that.
I forget, what is it called, these stories that are dealing with only one pastime?
Those are Upakhyan.
So they fit in with...
They'll just be details of an itihas.
Yeah.
Like that.
Too many
Itihasa,
Mahabharata,
and
Ramayana.
Itihasa, Ramayana, Mahabharata. There may be others, but those are your primary ones that we're concerned with, like that. Because how many have been published? That's another thing.
Mm, yes.
You know, that's also the point.
Yes.
You know, because Vyasadeva published Mahabharata and Valmiki published Ramayana.
Yes.
Yeah. By speaking.
Made public,
or by or wrote it. You know, Vyasadeva wrote it down, and I think, I'm not sure. Valmiki, it seems to be, was spoken because he taught it to Lav and Kush, Ram's sons.
Yes.
The actual story is about them reciting it to Ram at his sacrifice, and everything was going. I mean, so the Ramayana it kind of ends up nice, but then the point is that. You know, in other aspects of it, because the disciples of Valmiki then documented other aspects, because he was talking about so many things, so they documented all these other aspects. Mm-hmm. But at one point, then in the Uttara Ramayana, they figured out that, you know, this is wrong. Yes. So where's Sita? You know, and then he sent her to the forest and says, "We're not singing about this guy anymore." And they went back to the ashram. You know, and then it's figured out that, you know, it means how it all works out. You know, that Sita's their mother. You know, it's just, it was a whole scene like that.
So,
because it's specifically in connection with the Pandavas. Means just like you said, they asked the question, you have to give a very condensed background. She's going to go home and think of, how could I ask a question that'll get all those stories?
Women less intelligent.
No, to think of all those, to do that, you have to be... No, less intelligent doesn't mean less clever. Because the rule is four times as clever. So here, less intelligent means the discrimination between matter and spirit. That's where it's talking about. But as far as practical intelligence, then cleverness is four times the men. Right? Otherwise, why is it the ladies are in charge, but it looks like they're not? Yeah, that's called clever. You know, why should you do it? They'll do it, you know. Okay, here, the word Veda is used in reference to the Puranas and Itihasas. Because here he said, created the fifth Veda. So that fifth Veda, because it's not Rig Yajur Sama or Tarva, it's not the Brahmanas, it's not the Aranyakas, it's not the Upanishads. So that kind of, you run out of stuff there. So therefore, it's the Puranas. Right? And the Puranas means the Puranas, the Upapuranas, the Itihasas. All this, all that is all coming there. That's the fifth Veda. 13.3. We find similar statements elsewhere. The Purana is the fifth Veda. The Itihasas and Puranas are called the fifth Veda. And he taught the Vedas along with the Mahabharata, the fifth Veda. Mahabharata, Shanti Parva, 3.27, 18. Were the Itihasas and Puranas not Vedic, such statements as he taught the Vedas would not count them as the fifth, because the count ought to stick to things that belong to the same category. Right? You know, we don't say five apples, but actually the fifth apple's an orange. You know, so it doesn't really count.
When you put try to prove your point, you use Mahabharata.
Because one is that you're establishing here the commentaries, and the commentaries use more Vedic, because he also uses Upanishads in other places. But generally, most accepted that. So you're only a very small group won't accept Mahabharata Gita. Like the Mayavadis, they all accept Gita like that. So that means Mahabharata. Okay. The Bhavishya Purana says, the Veda of Krishna, Dvaipayana Vyas, is the fifth Veda, known as the Mahabharata. And in the Chandogya Upanishad, so here's Upanishads. Now. And in the Chandogya Upanishad, the version that belongs to the Kautamiya branch of the Samaveda, we find this. Oh, Kautamiya. Yeah, that's what we use, Kautamiya. We find this, Sir, I have studied the Rig Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, the Atharva Veda, the fourth, and Itihas Purana, the fifth Veda. Chandogya Upanishad of Kautamiya, Shaka, 712.
Kautamiya branch?
It's just one of the branches. Remember, there's 1,000 branches of Sama Veda, so Kautamiya is one of them. Like that. So that's what's most prominent in Bengal. Mm-hmm. Is the Kautamiya. Mm-hmm. So then Lord Chaitanya most likely would have been in that line. Mm-hmm. Three 13.5. One objection presumes that in the statement about, quote, the breath of the Supreme Being, end quote, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.4.10, the Itihasas and Puranas mentioned are nothing more than certain parts of the four Vedas. That objection, therefore, denies the separate existence of the Itihasas and Puranas as we know them. Right? In other words, they're trying to absorb them into the Vedas. Just means, what it means is not what we call the Puranas, but within the Veda itself, there are stories. They're talking about Indra did this, and that one did that, and you know, you have these kind of things. But the descriptions are a little bit more obscure. But they'll say, no, it's talking about that. It doesn't. There's no separate works. Right? Like that. Yeah. That objection therefore denies the separate existence of the Itihasas and Puranas as we know them. The evidence given above refutes that objection because they all talk about a fifth Veda. That's his point, is it has to be something separate, but at the same time of the same quality. That's the point he's always going, Jiva Goswami is always going back to. like that. They have to be separate to be the fifth. But if they're not gold, how do you, you know, deal with gold, right? The passage beginning, quote, the first is the Brahma Purana, refutes it as well. Right? So all of these, then, you know, from all the different angles. Commentary. The above references from various sources, both Smriti and Shruti, further justify the reputation of the Itihasas and Puranas as equivalents of the Vedas. Shruti references, like the passage cited here from the Chandogya Upanishad, are the primary evidence. But Srila Jiva Goswami also draws from the Puranas themselves for additional insight. The Skanda Puran tells how, during the work of periodic recreation, four-headed Brahma manifests the Puranas along with the Vedas. Lord Brahma is the grandfather of the, quote, immortal, or, more properly, very long-lived demigods, who descend from Arichi and Brahma's other sons. Brahma does not create the material cosmos ex nihilo. Rather, it already exists, but lies dormant in Brahma's body as he sleeps after the annihilation at the end of each of his days. Nor does he create the eternal Vedas. Therefore, in giving the account of his producing the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, uses the verb shashrijay, he sent forth. Right? In other words, he's given that. He's given how everything works. He's created everything. Then the annihilation, it all goes back, and then it comes out again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Marcus, as a side point, what is Vedic sleeping?
Vedic sleeping.
Yes.
Yeah, what are you? Which aspect are
like
you?
Positioning. Or
there's an asana. Yeah.
Is there?
There's a yoga asana for sleeping. Yeah. It's you're on your side, but you're not on. But you're not directly on your side.
It must be comfortable because I mean Lord Brahma, you know,
puts
in.
No, he does a good sleep. You know. Was it 4,300,000 years?
And then he's ready to create again.
It is pretty crazy, right? You know, so you need a good rest like that. But they do get up in the Brahma Muhurta. So it says it's nights that long, but it doesn't mean they sleep until the sun comes up. So they're up in the Brahma Muhurta, even within his night.
Yes.
Think how long the Mangal Arati. That's
a serious morning program.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just like 12 hours is 1,000 yugas, right? So that means 6 hours is 500.
Yes.
Right? So then 1 hour would be... He's a question. I already forgot what it is.
Eight point something.
81.
82,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's like that. There's 14 manas, and that's 71.
Right. It's
82. Right? And so it's a little bit less than, you know, so our morning programs like that, 45 minutes, 50 minutes. So it's the length of one manvantara.
Yeah.
So 72 mahayugas.
And half, so half Guruvastika, and then half.
Yeah. Should be good.
Should be really good.
According to the Skanda Purana, Brahma, from his mouths, first manifested the Vedas and their integral supplements, the six Vedangas, the Parapatas, and the Kramapatas. Having manifested these, he next produced the Puranas, all at the same time, Akilam. The Skanda Purana's account describes the Puranas as summaries of the complete Vedic scriptures, Sarva Shastra Mayam. Even though the Puranas are officially in the Smriti category, the account says they are unchanging, dhruvam, and beneficial to study, punyam, and they are expressions of the same transcendental sound of Shabda Puran as the Vedas, Nitya Shabda Mayam. The Puranas altogether are said to contain 1 billion verses, Shatakoti Pravishtaram, 100 koti. A koti is 10 million, so 110 million, you get a bit. The 18 Puranas known on earth, which total only 400,000 verses, are the result of Srila Vyasadeva's having condensed them from the original, the one original Purana, is still current on higher planets in its much longer version. See text 14.3. So we should go see text 14.3. Oh, that's the next one. 14.3. Just after that statement in the Matsya Purana comes this. In Ave Dwapara Yuga, I divide the Purana into 18 books, totally 400,000 verses. And that is how they are spread on Earth. But even today on the planets of the demigods, the Purana contains 1 billion verses. The 400,000 verse edition concisely embodies the purport of that original Purana. Matsya Purana 53:9-11. So this is being spoken by Vyasa himself. It would appear.
In the Matsya Purana?
Yes. Because he says, in every Dwapara Yuga, I divide the Purana.
Yeah.
You can also, depending upon how it is, you can also take it that that aspect is, how do you say it? The element means that that's Sunday between the third Yuga and Kali Yuga. That's where he does his work. Right. Unless, of course, like we said, in the other yugas, the other cycles, they become less intelligent a little earlier. Or, you know, just preparing, you know, getting ready, you know, like that. You know, best defenses and all that. So, you know, so he's already written it well before it comes along. You know, no one can say this is new, right? Okay. The statement cited from the Moksha Dharma and the Bhavishya Purana specifically call the Mahabharata the fifth Veda. Of course, the Mahabharata is one of the two important itihasas, and all the itihasas and Puranas together are generally termed the fifth Veda. In any case, strictly speaking, there are four Vedas, and references to a fifth are meant to classify the itihasas and Puranas. Because of this special Apurusheya status, on the same level of authority as the Vedas, the Bhavishya Purana calls the Mahabharata the Karshana Veda, because it was written by Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas. Karshana Veda. As a whole, these statements put to rest the objection previously discussed that the itihasas and Puranas mentioned in Shruti cannot be the ones edited by Veda Vyas and open to the purview even of uneducated Shudras. Hearing the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad's enumeration of scriptures that produce, that proceed from the breath of the Supreme, see text 12.4. Where is 12.4? This non-difference on the ground that the itihasas and puranas are as much aparishay as the Rig and other Vedas is implied in the passage of the Madhyandina Shruti, beginning, thus indeed the breath of the Supreme Being constitutes the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atarvangirasha Veda, Itihas and Purana, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.5.11. You can also, the point is he's been referencing the Upanishads all the way through, so there's not a problem for. One might conclude that the Itihasas and Puranas mentioned there are not necessarily separate from the four Vedas listed first. But now we see that many other authorized scriptures place the Itihasas and Puranas in a category of their own, equal to but separate from the first four Vedas. The Skanda Purana, for example, just after relating the emanation of the Vedas and then the Puranas from Lord Brahma, lists the Puranas beginning with the Brahma Purana. These Puranas are unquestionably the 18 major ones edited by Srila Vyasadeva. Text 14. Yes.
I can understand why there's a lot of emphasis on showing that the itihasas and the Puranas are the same as the Vedas, but why is there also a focus on showing that there's a difference?
Because if they're not different, then then they won't be existing as their separate entity. Then if they're the same work, then they will take the scholars will take that means whatever stories are in the Veda itself, in the Rig Veda or Yajur Sama, because they do have stories, that those are the stories being met. Those are the Puranas and Itihasas. So in that way, then again, the Puranas and Itihasas are cast out, that they're not actually solid scripture. See, there's a group of scholars that they will say only the Veda is real, and the Smriti is just, you know, it's not important. Does that make sense? So to defeat those elements, like that, for instance. And also, even those who accept Smriti, for them the Veda's in one category, the Puranas are in a different. So it shows that they're in a different category, but their weight is not different. They have just the same value, the same same weightiness of importance, you know, that they're also apurusheya. Because otherwise it's taken that Veda is apurusheya, but also the Puranas and Itihasas are apurusheya. Is that what it is? Text 14.1. In the Vayu Purana, Sutta Goswami describes in the following words why the Itihasas and Puranas are considered the fifth Veda, right? Sutta Goswami speaking, because all the Puranas are spoken by Sutta. It means of what we have. I don't know if he speaks all the others, but at least of what we have, the 18 are spoken by him. The personality of Godhead, Srila Vyasadeva, then chose me as an authorized speaker of the Itihasas and Puranas. At first, there was only one Veda, the Yajurveda. Vyasadeva divided it into four. Because sometimes it mentions Yajur, sometimes it mentions Atharva. Atharva just means, you know, all the different. Like now, it's still the Atharva, it's whatever's left, the miscellaneous. But if you have everything together, it's also has that miscellaneous element. You know. Within these were manifest the ritual acts of the four kinds of priests. And Vyasadeva arranged for the performance of sacrifice accordingly. With the Yajur mantras, he arranged the acts of the Advaryu priests. With the Rig mantras, those of the Hota priests. With the Sama mantras, the Udgata priests. And the Atharva mantras, and with the Atharva mantras, the Brahma. And so that's if you're doing the four there. But then you can also have the Acharya. Because sometimes it says that the Brahma just knows the three. And so only if they're using four, then they have those who are chanting. So then, even amongst the Udgatas, they may have all four Vedas like that. So they can be arranged variously. They can get pretty elaborate. Because the Brahma should know all the things. And then that way it also shows that the Atharva is the root.
Yes.
Because then... Yeah. Vyasadeva, being thoroughly conversant with the purport of the Puranas, fashioned his summary of them from akhyanas, upakhyanas, and gattas. Right? Here's your what I was talking about. But akhyanas are, you know, a bigger story. Upakhyana is the smaller story. Gattas must get down to, you know, like really, really fine.
What, time was the Polish?
And then he scratched his, you know, right, his nose on the right side, just above, you know.
With the index finger.
Yes, and he did that three times. Yeah, so that's the gottas. Right? Oh, best of brahmanas, whatever it remained from the division of the Veda into four is considered to belong to the Yajurveda, such as the definitive word on understanding the revealed scriptures, Vayu Purana. 60, 21, 22. Yeah, because see, your akhyanas and upakhyanas, then they're going to be getting into more detail. So you fashion them on that principle. How they're so that it makes it more of a, you know, enough detail to, you know, catch interest, be able to feel it applies in your life. Like that. 14.2. We see also that in the recitation of the Brahma Yajna, the Itihasas and Puranas are employed, and thus enjoin the brahmanas, itihasas, and puranas serve as the text describing the details of the rituals. Taittiriya Aranyaka 2.9. Unless the itihasas and puranas were Vedic, this could not be so. Yes.
Maharaj, but why is it that the further you go down in Varna, then the more detail is required? Like in Brahmana, then you can even just go Vedanta sutras and make catching of this, and then the further you go down, then it's required more. Just more mind.
More mind. Like that. Because the point is for the artist, it's about the mind. And so intelligence is only used in connection with what the mind is interested in, right? But when you go up, then the intelligence can be, you know, will have that aspect, but it can also work out so many of the... It means, in other words, the artist, what he thinks of, that's important, right? In his mind, he comes up with some far-out artistic concept. He tries to document that in his medium. And, you know, as time goes, they get more and more weird, right? But the point is that the Brahmins can analyze all these things that you're not going to keep.
Yes.
So that takes detachment. So because of the attachment, then you they're not going to do that. Does that make sense? Or even if they did it, then they want all of those, but they can't even deal with all those. So therefore, stick to what you can deal with. So... Does that make sense? Also, the detail keeps them busy. Right?
Something to digest.
Yeah, something to work on. You understand? It keeps them busy physically.
Right.
Physically, emotionally, like that. The others, it'll keep them busy more emotionally, intellectually. We see also that in the recitation of the Brahma Yajna, we just did that, the Supreme Lord says in the Matsya Purana, O best of Brahmanas. But, so, yeah. The Brahma Yajna, that's the opening to the Vedas and everything like that. So he's saying that when they're doing that, then they're also quoted. Because sometimes rituals are being brought from there. And so it's all described. Does that make sense? So unless they're of the same caliber, you can't quote from them and bring them into the Brahma Yajna, which is the opening where you're defining, you know, the principles like that. Like that. Yeah. The Supreme Lord says in the Matsya Purana, O best of Brahmanas, foreseeing that in the course of time the Puranas will be neglected, I appear as Vyas in each age to condense them. Matsya Purana 53.8. According to what we have seen here and what the Lord means to say is, quote, I edit the already existing Purana to make it easier to grasp. Right? These people aren't so interested anymore, so therefore you give more of an essential. So in other words, all the Puranas there is those are easier to grasp. You know, so as Kali Yuga progresses, it's less and less easy to grasp.
Yes.
Rapt attention is sparse. It's sparse.
Yeah, so eventually, you know, attention, that's not even in the dictionary. You know, yeah.
Why is it teaching to be grasped? Is the principle that is still behind this?
Easier to grasp? No, everything is. That's why all of these elements are there. Because before, you didn't have to make it easier to grasp, they would grasp it. You know what I'm saying? It's just the nature. You know, it's just like, you know, the... you don't have to make the, the pile of grains easier to grasp for the rat. You know, he's competent to accomplish his task. Right? So the point is the intellectual state of people before was so strong that you gave them that material, they would contemplate that and they would understand all the different developments from it. Right? Just like Brahma or Tapa, And then from that, then he could grasp so many other things. Does that make sense? Or he gets, you know, the Gayatri Mantra, and then from that creates the whole universe. So that means he's able to grasp what all the imports that are there. Does that make sense? But people are neglecting, so that means they're just taking to the externals, only, you know, referring to the stories, not actually studying. So then they're being condensed down to what's essential. The Nrisimha Puran has, you know, half a page on Lord Mosquito, but you know, there's probably a whole, you know, very large story about Lord Mosquito.
And that story.
For the Nrisimha Puran. Just after that statement in the Matsya Puran comes this. In every Dwapara Yuga, I divide the Purana into 18 books, totaling 400,000 verses. And that is how they are spread on earth. But even today, on the planets of the demigods, the Puranas contain 1 billion verses. The 400,000 verse edition concisely embodies the purport of that original Purana. Matsya Purana 53:9-11.
It's funny, 400,000 verses is concise.
Yes, the concisely.
Travel.
Yeah. I mean, the demigods, you know, how you say, they have chariots, so I'm sure it'll fit in there. 18 Puranas are like this big. So
it's like Purana Digest.
Yeah.
Like Reader's Digest. Yeah.
The Purana Digest. Yeah. 14:4. Since it has been stated, quote, whatever was left over is considered Yajurveda, end quote. Vayu Purana 16:22. These 400,000 verses were not new compositions, but the most useful portions of the original gathered into an essential condensed version for the world of mortals. Commentary. Ugashravasuta learned the Puranas from his father, Romaharshana, whom Krishna Dwaipayan of Vyasa had chosen from amongst his disciples to be the prime authority on the Itihasas and Puranas. The Puranas say that Ugrasrava also studied them from Vyasa directly. Therefore, in the passage cited in text 14:1 from the Vayu Purana, Ugrasrava says that it was Vyasadeva who deputed him as Puranic authority. Lord Balaram also later appointed him to replace Romaharshana, as recounted in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:78-34-36. He mentions this Ugrasrava. Of course.
As opposed to?
As Romaharsha.
As the son of Romaharsha.
No, that's there. But in saying that Vyasadeva deputed him as Puranic authority.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Ugrasrava. Yeah, that's in the previous text 13. You just said that.
Oh, but it just says Sutta. Because they're both Sutta. Because I can't say. I just know that, you know, Mahabharata and Bhagavatam are Ugrasrava.
Yeah, this is all the Puranas, my understanding, are Ugrasrava.
Oh, really?
Ugrasrava, Sutta Goswami.
Okay. Ugrasrava here affirms the Aparushaya authority of the Puranas by tracing the Vedic origin. Before Srila Vedavyasa's editing, there was only one undivided Veda. The four types of mantras comprising the four basic Vedas were then mixed together randomly, along with other explanatory and historical texts. I'm not sure if it would be totally randomly, but they were just all the variety of verses would have been used together. I'm not sure that it was a potpourri, but no.
Okay.
You know, it's just so he just took out and removed all the parts. But before Kali Yuga, the intelligent Brahmins were competent enough to locate the particular mantras they needed from the unordered collection. Only in the generally corrupt age of Kali is it necessary to divide the Vedas into separate books. Right, because you only need to hear once. And then as you read, you know, this is here, you can hold all that together. So it doesn't matter. Because in describing something, there'll be so many things from so many places, and then you can put it all together. But now you have to bring all the things together so it makes it easier to understand. Yes. You know, just like now, you'll take sometimes books, and then they'll take them and put them down into a simple like a
bridge version.
Yeah, a bridge version or something where it just gives the technical points or, you know, how it's supposed to work or function like that. Because a bigger study is, you know, like they say, you have these short studies, these like certificate courses and all that, but they're covering the essential material that might be covered in a, you know, a 3 or 4 year college degree, like that. So it's the same principle. You know, get down to what's practical, what would be easily usable, easily accessible. So, you know, he said he did that with 400,000 verses. So that's the easily acceptable. In other words, 400,000 is a lot more easy to approach than a billion. You know, so that's like a... Yeah, it's almost, it's... What, 250 times condensed. So that'd be like taking, you know, a 1,000-page book and making it into 4 pages.
Yes.
So it's quite condensed. That's quite condensed.
That's condensed.
That's condensed.
He does good work.
Like that, yeah. But what's his name? Cliff? Cliff's notes. I don't think they do it that condensed.
Right? I don't know.
You know Cliff
Notes?
Cliff Notes.
Cliff Notes.
Now, whether Cliff knows is another thing. He makes notes.
A fugerman knows. Like,
Cliff's knows.
It's maybe like for you know, like Vedas for idiots.
Have like, oh, for dummies?
Dummies.
Yeah.
Vedic
yeah.
For dummies.
Yeah. We're the dummies.
Yes.
Yeah. The analogy suggested in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to explain this division is that of a rich man's collection of rare jewels. An owner of many diamonds, rubies, emeralds, and sapphires who generally keeps them mixed in one box might have someone sort them out for him in 4 separate piles. The sorting does not change the collection, only the order. Rig, Atharva, Yaju, Samnam, Rashir, Udritya, Vargasa, Chatashra Sama Samhitas Chakre, Mantrer Mani Gana Iva. Srila Vyasadeva separated the mantras of the Rig, Atharva, Yajra, and Samavedas into 4 divisions, just as one sorts a mixed collection of jewels into piles. Thus, he composed 4 distinct bodies of Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.650. 4 categories of Vedic mantras exist eternally, each serving a different function through a different style of language. The Rig mantras praise the demigods who represent the personal powers of the Supreme Lord. The Hota priests who use these mantras in sacrifices are compared to the master of ceremonies and his assistant and his assistants at a feast who invite the special guests. Greet them and make arrangements to satisfy them. Means, in other words, the Hota means each of the 4 has 3 assistants. Right? So you have 4 main priests, each has 3. So there's 16 total. That's for a, you know, standard. But, you know, some of the yajnas like Soma, then there's 90 priests. So there's a lot of extra stuff going on. But the standard is that. Right?
Large?
Yes.
The Vedas are eternal.
Yes.
They existed before creation.
Yes.
So I wanted to know, they existing in this form of 4 Vedas, or sometimes manifesting as 1 Veda?
No, it's just it's 1 Veda. Vyasadeva compiles it into 4.
So before creation, there's one Veda.
There's the Veda,
right.
And then there's the Puranas and Itihas.
Right.
It's also 1 literature. Because it's a body, sees it, the Vedic works in slightly different, when you're talking about the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, they're a category of knowledge. Right? It's not like today was it's published in a particular, how you say, book, you know, documented on paper or something like that. But we'll take it, that means book.
Mm.
But here, book means it's a particular body of knowledge. Like Ayurveda is a particular body of knowledge. Now, there may be documented today in certain books, but it's a body of knowledge like that. Does that make sense? So the Veda is a particular body of knowledge. So it's one thing. And so then he divides it so that in here you can make it very clear what the four priests do. You can also, from that, if you can only deal with one Veda, then you can do that your part there. And then someone who knows all of them, he will be able to oversee the bigger yajnas, you know, as the Brahma. Or then you can do the whole sacrifice just from Rig Veda. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, you know, how it would be accomplished.
So when they, before descending to this material world, they are standing in front. Prabhupada was explaining in one place, was standing, and they like, I don't remember exactly, but they're like, try to wake up like a king. It was an example like a king, sleeping there, glorifying the king to wake up him from a dream.
Yep. So
the Vedas.
But
the personified, they have personified.
Yeah, no, that I understand.
Okay. So so my question is, specifically, that they are standing there in the form of the four Vedas, or
what does it matter?
Just one.
What if there are three and a half? One of them is a midget. You know what I'm saying? What does it mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because why then? The thing that you haven't caught is this is before creation. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they there?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Narad Muni's there. Garuda's there. Hanuman's there.
Okay.
You know, all the other great sages and everything. But there's no creation. So how are they there? I would think that would be more your question.
Yeah, that's just my question.
Otherwise, you'd be saying, you know, how are they standing? What asana? Do they have their feet together? Are they relaxed? Are they more formal? Or, but what if there's nothing there but the Lord? Are they standing on the Lord, or are they floating in space? Or, you know, how does this work?
My question is how they, because they are eternal, how they are descending to this material world.
Just like all the avatars of the Lord, they descend to the, you know, okay, just by the Lord's grace. They're the Lord's breathing. He gives it to Brahma. Brahma then speaks them and reveals them. Does that make sense? Yes? The Advayu priests chant the mystical Yajur mantras, with which they conjure up the sacrificial environment from simple objects in ordinary space and time, in effect creating the sacrificial arena and paraphernalia. Right, because they're using leaves and mud and, you know, bricks and all that, and then they turn it into the Yajnashala.
Nice.
Right? The mantras they chant affect these mystic transformations through the power of evocative language. Examples of the special creative mode of speech are sometimes found even in mundane life, as when a judge declares, "Now I pronounce you man and wife," or "I sentence you to be hanged by the neck until dead." Is there some kind of connection here? Why? This is Gopi, or okay, so speaking for this is Apta or something, speaking for realization. May God. Oh, this is. Next it says, and may God have mercy on your soul. Or you could have said the other one first, and,
yeah,
then, and now I pronounce you man and wife. Yeah, I guess. Oh, boy.
God's speed.
Okay. In mundane life. Okay. Oh. No, it means the point is it's like you're taking water and invoking the Ganga. You know, you're taking the pots and then invoking deities, you know, mantras, you know, the kusa grass, all the different things. They're all empowered. So everything in the Yajnashala has been installed. It's been, you know, by mantras. The doors, the flags, the pots, the places, the kunda, everything like that. They even make the fire. They also make the fire, purify the fire. Once it's done, then the hotri then installs the fire. That's when his starts. So when you're starting from nothing up to the fire, that's the advaryu. Then once the fire is made, then installing the fire and all the worship of the fire, that's the hota. Like that. The Sama mantras sung by the Udgata priests are extremely complex musical modifications of selected Rik mantras, meant for the entertainment of demigod guests at Soma sacrifices. Thoroughly permuted, interpolated with non-significant syllables. No, that's who's saying that?
Yeah, it's the
interpolated. Okay, they're interpolated with non-significant syllables. That wouldn't be correct, and hardly recognizable as music to human ears. Now we're starting to get just downright nasty. The Sama mantras accompany the more elaborate sacrifice in which Soma is offered. No, that's there. They're used in everything. Because the thing is, the Sama, Krishna says, of Vedas, I am the Sama Veda. Yes. And there's the rule, if you're studying one of the other Vedas, and you can hear the Sama Veda, you stop studying your Veda until the same time the next day. Some will say it's because they're used to when people die. But the point is, when people die, then that's the point of, you know, getting blessings so that they're elevated. So that's the thing. It's the most powerful like that because it represents the Lord. Yeah. So it's a very special. So these interpolated, because interpolated means that they're put in. So they're trying to say they're put in, but if it's apurusheya, that means they've always been there. So all those ha, uha, uha, all that kind of stuff is so-called interpolated non-significant syllables. Those are the demigods. You know, because the Lord is wonderful, because it's in praise of the Lord and these kind of things. It's just so wonderful. Just like you see something wonderful, you go, ah. So these are actually the pronouncements of the personalities involved in that particular aspect, and that's how they were saying them.
Okay.
So they're not interpolated, they're not added, they're not, you know, not that they're non-significant, and the element of non-recognizable to human ears, that's non-recognizable to someone who doesn't know music.
Isn't it beautiful, actually?
It's nice, but he's saying you can't quite tell. I was with one, you know, one of these top professional musicians. I started singing the mantra. He says, oh, that's this raga. And then another one, oh, that's that raga. So the point is the Samaveda is the basis of the music. Then, just like you have the Vedic grammar, and you have the classical grammar for common use in poetry. So then the ragas, or let's say it's not even so you have what's called the jatis. They come from there. So there's 18 jatis come from the music of the Sama Veda. Prabhupada always calls it music. He doesn't say it's hardly recognizable. So then from that, because the jatis were very difficult, because they have their notes, but there's no rules on how long you hold a note or anything like that. It's not set. But there's a mood that it has, so you have to keep that mood. So you have to be very expert to use the jatis, because there's only 18, so from that 18 you can get everything. So the Narad Muni, he gave the ragas, which is more exact and specific, only this note with this and this one after that and that combination. So it's more complex, but it's more easily learnable. But someone who actually understands can see from the raga back to the jati, back to the Sama Veda. You know? Yes. And that guy was pretty human. You know, just, you know, pretty... Anyway, other than his music, just one of the Bengalis in Calcutta. You know. You understand? Yeah. So it's not there. There is the point that if you're listening to most Sambeda tapes that you can get, the people who chant them are generally more old, quite mature. And somehow or another, I don't know why, most of them have really, really rough voices. I don't know why. So that may be why he's commented. Because I've heard, I know one pundit who he himself is an expert in classical music and he teaches it. You know, I mean, you ever heard of the Subramanyam? Vidya, something, you hear fabulous voices, the Madhva. Like that, he taught him. He's the guru. So when he chants Sama, it's you can tell that. Plus the line is Ranayani. It's much more complicated. What we're using is this Kotamiya. It's more simple.
Maharaj, what would be the difference between ragas and raginis?
The sari. Then there's putras and putris. And then they have friends. Like that. So it's a whole scene. Yeah.
So these couple of lines were not exactly the same way.
Not exactly. No. Where the information is coming from, I don't know. The Tarva mantras expressed by the Brahma priests in a language of incantation against various inimical forces are mainly reserved for rectifying mistakes or inauspicious intrusions into the sacrifice, if there is such stuff. But the main point is he has to be expert in the other three. So here when it says Atarva, it means all the Veda. Not just he just knows the Atarva Veda. Because the Brahma priest means he has to see that the Hota, the Advaryu, and the Udgata make no mistakes. Right, so he's like the guru of the sacrifice, but he's one of the practical managers of it. So if you're having really big sacrifices, then you have an acharya, that he's there to see that the others are doing their job, but he doesn't manage it. He only deals with them, like that. You know, so basically, he would just deal with the Brahma, and the Brahma would see that it gets done. Does that make sense? That would be how it would work. But otherwise, these inimical forces, and that when the Hota installs the fire, he puts kusha grass around the kunda. That's to keep away your rakshasas and all these other inimical forces. So these are done. But I guess if it gets out of hand, then you know what I'm saying? Because here it's understood that the Atarva only is dealing with those. That's the Atarva as now. But the point is here it would mean, would infer, you'd know that, you'd be a Chaturvedi. Right? The others would just only have to be in the one Vedi, but the Brahma should be a Chaturvedi.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if you have these big ones, you still have the Brahma, and you have Atarva Veda priests who chant just the Atarva Veda mantras. But the Atarva Veda has those things, because that's the miscellaneous, but it also has the major mantras, Purusha Shukta and all those things. Like that. It's, you know what I'm saying? According to the statement of the Vayu Purana under discussion, the original combined Veda was known as the Yajurveda. One might object that this statement disagrees with the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad's account of which the breathing of Lord Vishnu created the Vedas one after another. The Rig Veda being created first. Text 12.4. In a commentary on Sri Tattvasandarbha, written not long after Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary, but without reference to Srila Baladeva's opinions, Srila Radha Mohan Vachaspati answers this objection. He says that when the Rig and other Vedas are said to have appeared in distinct order from Mahavishnu at the beginning of the current cycle of creation, what is being referred to is only their periodic re-manifestation. Actually, all four perpetually coexist. And because the Yajur mantras are the most prominent, the complete corpus can be called the Yajur Veda. This accords with the hermeneutic rule, Adikena Vyapadesha Bhavanti, a name assigned according to the most prominent category of a mixed group. The Yajna mantras are especially important because they are required in the performance of ritual sacrifice, which is one of the primary purposes of the Veda. You can also have it is that all these things come out. It's just like if you're making something, you can put in all the various things. You know, you put in the structure, you put in this, you put in that. Does that make sense? But it's all part of one thing, so it's still one Veda. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because you have this particular kind of mantra, that kind of mantra, all these have their place in the Veda. All it is so it's not that when they're as one Veda, the Rig elements of the Rigs don't exist. The Rigs always exist. But the problem is it, explaining it just in this way, it's not clear that the Rig Veda is made up of Rigs or hymns. So in other words, there's hymns, prose, and songs. So that's all together in the Veda. Mm-hmm. So the Rigs are always there, whether it's as one Veda or whether they're separated. So Vyasadeva takes the Rigs, puts them in one place, takes the prose, puts it in one place, and takes the Samans and puts it in one place. And then what's left, that's the Atharva Veda. So that way also you get the explanation that it's all Atharva Veda.
Yes.
And so, because they were all in there, just when you take everything else, what's left is still Atharva Veda. Right?
Yes.
You know, just now the Atharva has that uniqueness of Atharva rather than it being the miscellaneous of all of them together.
Yes.
Right? At the same time, as it's also mentioned here, the Yajur Veda. I think Prabhupada mentions both. That it's known as the Yajur and as the Atharva. So then, Yajur being the prose, that's what, how everything is set up and arranged. So that in sacrifice, you have to set up, so in other words, the environment, so it's like the Sambandha element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then that then you can also, like, so you have Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes from that. But the whole point is to be able to do the sacrifice Vasudeva. So that's, you know. So you can look from all these various kinds of approaches. And they're all right, and none of them are wrong. That's the thing, is there's no such thing as a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what perspective is being used for the definition. You have to take one of them. Because right. They're all correct, you know, for the situation, you take one of them and work with that. So, okay. The Yajna mantras, okay. After dividing the Veda into four, Srila Vyasadeva fashioned portions of the remaining Yajna Veda material into the Itihasas and Puranas. Thus, the Puranas and epics are not human creations. They are authorless and are the Veda. The specific portions of the Yajna Veda Vyasadeva used are called Akhyanas, Upakhyanas, and Gatas. In his commentary on the Vishnu Purana 3.6.16, Sridhar Swami defines these three terms. An Akhyana is a narration of something witnessed by the speaker, while an Upakhyana is a narration of something the speaker has not witnessed but rather heard about. Gatas are songs about the forefathers and early earthly beings. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan uses similar definitions. Yeah, so most of the time you hear about Upakhyanas, because it means if you've heard about it, then that's there. But these are also established, you know, literature. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan uses similar definitions. Akhyanas are Puranic texts according to the strict definition of five required topics. Upakhyanas are other historical accounts. Gatas are specially composed musical poems. In Srila Baladeva's opinion, in the quotation from the Vayu Purana, the words Purana, Samhitas, Chakre means that Vyasadeva fashioned his own summary of the Puranas, namely the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is composed of Akhyanas, Upakhyanas, and Gatas, as defined by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Although Vyasadeva is credited with being the author of the Mahabharata, in fact he played the role of a Vedic rishi, rediscovering in his meditation the eternal text. In the verse, because it's also, what we have is 100,000 verses, but when he originally composed it, it was 600,000. But it was only published as here, as 100,000. Like that. So even in the heavenly planets, the Mahabharata is bigger. Like that.
We have more time. Capacity.
Yeah, general. More focus.
Yeah.
Like that.
Do
In the verse of Machi Purana quoted in text 14.2, the Supreme Lord says, I appear as Vyas in each age. Here, each age means each cycle of ages. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas appeared near the end of the Dwapara Yuga. And as confirmed by the Vishnu Purana, a different person is empowered by the personality of Godhead to take the role of Vyas in each cycle of ages. Okay, this is Vishnu Purana. During this period of Vaivasvata Manu's reign, 28 different exalted sages have edited the Vedas in one Dwapara age after another. O best of souls, 28 Veda Vyasas have come and divided the Vedas into four parts in each Dwapara Yuga. Vishnu Purana 3:3-9-10. Text 14.2 mentions the sacrifice called Brahma Yajna. This is one of the five great sacrifices, Pancha Mahayagya, enjoined for every Vedic householder. Okay. Household of Brahmana as daily atonement for the unavoidable violence he commits in the five places of slaughter in the house. The broom, the water pot, the spice mortar, the kitchen stove, and the stone of which rice is ground. What are these five sacrifices? A householder must honor the demigods by Deva Yajna, daily fire sacrifice, the revered forefathers by Pitri Yajna, offering of pinda, human beings by Atiti Yajna, hospitality to guests, all living beings by Bhuta Yajna, the symbolic offering of a portion of food from one's plate at every meal. They actually go around the house. It means in a very formal, there's the Vishwadeva puja. There's so many places all around the house. It's a lot of offerings. So they cook a lot of rice, and that rice is taken and put in all those places with mantra and stuff. But at the same time, as there is the element when you're eating, when you individually sit down to eat, a portion is put aside. Like that.
What do you do with that after you finish?
You?
What do you do with that after? With that portion? With all those portions?
That generally goes with the plate. But I mean, we don't worry about it because we're dealing with prasad and all that, so it's not a matter that you've already pleased Krishna, so you don't have to worry. But those who are just following only that Vedic line or devotees, they have to do all these things. It means these five yajnas, you don't do them, you go to hell. Every grihastha has to do these. No ifs, ands, or buts. But as devotees, then they're taken care of by worship of Krishna. As long as you're doing it. If you're not, this is your responsibility. So this idea is that I'll do whatever I like, whatever I please, just doesn't exist. There is no situation like that in the universe. Dogs don't do just whatever they like. They only do dog stuff. Cats do cat stuff, birds do bird stuff, right? And each one does their specific, like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. So, it's like, the dachshunds, run into little holes after foxes. St. Bernard's carrying around kegs to, skiers. It means they have their position. It's not that it goes out of things. So, everybody has what they have to do. If they don't do what they're supposed to do, follow these rules, then they're not within the Vedic system. So then they're called tribals.
Yes.
Right? Now tribals want to do whatever they want. That's up to them, but it doesn't mean that they won't get the reactions. Yes.
So that means that each grihastha families who are not a devotees and who are not following this,
then there's reaction. That's all an aspect. It doesn't mean that they're not also doing some good stuff, that they'll get benefit. They're two separate things, right? Good doesn't nullify bad. When you're dealing with karma, good doesn't nullify bad. Bad doesn't nullify good.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense? So what bad they do, they'll get that reaction. What good they do, they'll get that reaction.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll be together. Sometimes they'll be separate. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the point is what he's pointing out here is, here he's using Brahma Yajna, meaning that householder sacrifice. Like before, when I was mentioning it, as the opening of generally the chanting of the Vedic mantras.
Mm-hmm.
When they open the chant, when they're doing formal recitation, they'll start with the Brahma Yajna, which is the first verse from each of the Vedas. Right? And then from that, they'll go into reciting their own Vedas. Sometimes they'll do more. That's a short one, it's just four. Otherwise, they'll give you know, various verses and things from there. So in there also, then you can have this variety of mantras. Does that make sense? But here, then it would be more of a more of a specific, because like you can do a Brahma Yajna without Purana, but what it's saying here is that Brahma Yajna of doing the five Pancha Mahayagyas is that there is pulling so many things from the Puranic verses and that are being used in the performance of that their daily rituals, right? So every Brahmin has to do those. Like that. Does this make sense? So therefore, when Prabhupada just reduces it down to sit down and say Sarira Vidyajal, and then we can get out of shape, so ritualistic. Don't know what ritual is. You know, it means you've cooked, you've gone around taking care of all these things, you've fed your guests, you've already set aside the food for your dependents, like that. And then what's left, the husband and wife can sit down and eat. And if they have some close friends in that, they sit down in there. Like that. So they may do it elaborately, sit at the dinner table, you know, do the whole thing like this. But the point is they had to have arranged everything else first. Saruga Jajal's pretty easy.
Close friends, that's also one of the ancient concepts.
Yeah. No, because the atiti means they're not a close friend; they're actually a revered guest. Right. If somebody you know shows up at the door, they're not counted as atiti. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why then when they walk in the door, you don't even look up; you just say, "Yeah, there's drinks in the fridge," right? You know, keep on with what you're doing. Yeah.
Not so big a reaction.
No, not so big. And finally, the Vedic sages by Brahma Yajna, recitation from various scriptures at the time of chanting the Gayatri Mantra. Also just study of the Veda. Studying the Veda, studying the Shastras. Studying the Shastras, that's what you owe to the sages. Because they're the ones that reveal the scriptures. So our debt to the sages is paid by studying them. The details of the Brahma Yajna are specified in various shrutis, such as the Saptapada Brahmana and Taittiriya Aranyaka, and also if you want to, you know, get the, that's about the exact ritual, but explanation of it and everything else, that's in Manu, like that. But the detail of the actual word, the ritual itself, that will be. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada cited this unidentified verse in a Chaitanya Charitamrita purport. By offering oblations with ghee, one satisfies the demigods. By studying the Vedas, one performs Brahma Yajna, which satisfies the great sages. Offering libations of water before one's forefathers is called Pritri Yajna. By offering tribute, one performs Bhuta Yajna. By properly receiving guests, one performs Nri Yajna. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 22.141. In the next verse, at much of the time, Prabhupada, there's a possibility it could be Manu, because he quotes so many verses exactly from Manu. Because Manu says this.
Yes.
Right? Then gives explanation. He explains it from many different ways. Like that. In the next verse, Jiva Goswami further substantiates his conclusion about the Vedic nature of the Itihasas and Puranas. He also explains the meaning of the name Veda Vyas. It's yet to be revealed.
No issues.
Hmm?
No issues.
No issues. At least no one asks any issues. Okay. 2.1b. The Puranas are Vedic. 12 through 15.4 continued. Text 15.1 through 15.4. Vishaya. The Itihasas and Puranas position in relation to the Vedas, so Vishaya. So here we have, throughout the Sandarbhas, footnote 1, Sri Jiva Goswami makes implicit use of the fivefold logical system of Adhikarana, the same system used throughout Vedanta Sutra, The definitions for each adhikarana used herein are drawn from the following verse commonly found in the commentaries on Vedanta Mimamsa Shastra. Okay. Vishaya. In a text, an adhikarana refers to a topic which consists of five elements. The subject matter, Vishaya, wherein the Vedic mantra in question is presented. Doubts, Shamshaya, regarding the various possible meanings of the mantra. An opponent's interpretation of meaning, Purvapaksha, which is logically presented. An alternative viewpoint, Uttaram, which points out the fallacies in the logic of the opponent. And ascertain the final meaning, Nirnaya. Right? Also, we catch how it works here. So, here, also referred as Panchananyaya, these five syllogistic aspects of an adhikarana are Vishaya, thesis or pratigya, solemn statement. Shamshaya, doubt or hetu, reasons, right? Because it mentions the shamshaya is possible meanings of the mantra, right? So that means you give what you are, but someone else has a doubt, they have their other, right? So they will present, therefore, their Purvapaksha, which you will then give your reasons why. In other words, that's where all your examples come in, right? Purvapaksha, antithesis, prima facie or udaharana, examples. Right. In other words, you see, it's not specifically one or the other. These two work simultaneously. You can just get solemn statement, reasons, examples, further explanations, and supporting quotations from scripture, right? Or your siddhanta. That's if you don't have an opponent.
Yeah.
But if there is an opponent, then you'll have this, where you give your reasons, that creates a doubt. Where you're giving your examples, they present their thesis, because they can't doubt until they've heard your reasons.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How it's related to the previous week?
This is an explanation of the new format for the study guide, not for the previous books.
Mm-hmm.
But this Panchananyaya is what Jiva Goswami is using implicitly throughout the Samvada.
Right? Uttaram, alternate viewpoint, or Upanaya, further explanations. Means, in other words, it's the alternate viewpoint. Means I've said this, you've said that. Now, alternatively, you can look at it and see how what you're saying is already concluded in here. Does that make sense? And also what some call it, synthesis. Right? And Nirnaya, the correct conclusion, or Siddhanta, and with supporting quotations from scriptures. It also should give all its connections and everything like that.
Yes.
Does that
So, this type of the system is used for writing, also by speaking?
Yes, both. It means if you look at, it means like he's saying the Sundarbhas are written like that, anything, you look at Prabhupada's purports,
yes,
they're written like this.
Vedanta Sutra
especially, like that. It's just that it will technically break them down into the adhikarnas,
yes,
like that, so you're clear.
When people want to discuss philosophy,
they use this. Because, in other words, you say your point.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can say, well, that's stupid, but that's not a thesis. You know, so then the point is, this stupid means, does that mean it wasn't intelligently presented? You know, it means it was incoherent. You know, what's your thesis? Like that. And then somebody else says, that was stupid. Okay, then maybe you have something, but they said something, you know, used words and is, you know, intelligible, and it had some you know, meaning. They can't just say that's stupid. That's modern. That's
yes.
Rhetoric.
Yes.
Rhetoric means you just come in and say whatever it is, we'll get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so by being nice, or by being nasty, by, you know, whatever it is, like that. So, but logic means is that, okay, you've said this, but there's this, I find this fault here. You're saying this, you know, this point. You know, it's like, you know, there's fire on the mountain, but, you know, it could be that smoke is something else,
yes,
like that. So does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, we know that they're, you know, up on that mountain because, you know, it's kind of out there a bit, and, you know, and wherever it is in Florida, there's one guy from Cuba, he lives there, right? And he doesn't want to be caught by the local authorities. And, you know, he brought with him, the only thing he brought with him, much to his wife's dismay, was a large trunk of cigars. Because he says, everything else you can get in Florida, in America, but you can't get these. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, then you can go on. But you have to have said something first. right? And given your reasons. And then he has a doubt about that, so then he'll present it. So then you'll give yours and then show examples of how it fits. No, no, because this, you know, all of that. So yes, in that case, then it's still, you know, you can say, yes, it's true, because, you know, fire will produce smoke, but smoke can't be produced without fire. So therefore, then what I'm saying and what you're saying are not different. I'm saying this fire on the mountain, but, you know, it may have been originally perceived of that just meant, the fire of the bush on the mountain. But there's still fire on the mountain, but it's just this guy's cigar. But it's fire that's producing the smoke. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, that's you know, then you conclude. So the whole process comes out, but you are establishing in this line. So you see in the purports, Prabhupada is always doing this. But there's very nice ways you can do it, because sometimes the statement and its reasons are put exactly together. Yes. You know? Or you know, the reason, the example. So they can be put together in very, very nice ways, as opposed to, it's not just they exactly have to be like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just exactly completely in little boxes.
Yes.
So that's the expertise of the person presenting, or the medium that they're using. Mm-hmm. You know, Vedanta Sutra, the separate verses, so it'll work out that way. But in here, because you're writing in this prose form, it has that element of using that, you know, the various literary techniques. Mm-hmm. And so then, but if you analyze, you see the purports are written in this way.
Yes.
So that's why, so you want to know the same thing. If you want to know what is, you know, what exactly is the most important element in this purport, you know, and the purports on the verse, therefore look at the beginning and end.
Yes.
You know, look at what's repeated, what's glorified, you know, what's unique, what's given the results. Yes, and by doing this, one, you know, frees oneself from all material, you know, entanglement, and, you know, how you say, transfers oneself to the spiritual world. So, you know, so that's what you're about. But what it is that's doing that, because that's being glorified. So what's being glorified?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can see, does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's the same thing, is that you can understand what the Panchanga Nyaya is presenting by using those six lingas, the Tatparya lingas.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the presentation is Panchanga Nyaya.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Is that okay? Okay. So Shamshaya. The Puranas and Itihasas are Veda. They are co-eternal with the Vedas and Apurusheya. Oh, so this is just a continuing of that commentary that we were just doing. But this doesn't have the verses.
Yes. No, the verses are included in the Udra.
Oh, okay. Although classified as Smriti, they are superior to ordinary Smriti by virtue of their origin. They, therefore, are equivalent authority to Shruti. Purva Paksha 1. The Puranas are of mundane authorship. The Puranas have names like Skanda Purana and Agni Purana, having been composed by these persons, Skanda and Agni. They must therefore not be Apurusheya, not be eternal. Uttaram 1. Eternal scripture, changing speaker. No, if this were the case, the Vedas themselves would have to be considered Parusheya, since some parts have names like Katha Upanishad and Aitreya Brahmana, which refer to sages Katha and Aitreya. Jiva Goswami hints at the above point in Anucheda 15.2. The Puranas have names like Skanda and Agni, but these pertain to persons who spoke them, as do names like Kataka and so on. Otherwise, they are named according to the fixed order in which they are composed. And so, when we sometimes hear that Puranas are not eternal, such statements refer only to their visible manifestation and disappearance. T.S. is Tattva Sandarbha 15.2. Okay. Whether Shruti or Smriti, numerous portions of the Vedas are named after sages or demigods. Whether Shruti or Smriti, numerous portions of the Vedas are named after sages or demigods. However, this does not entail authorship. they were not necessarily composed by their namesakes. Rather, these texts derive their names from the main exponent, first teacher, or rearranger. Similarly, some scriptures are named after the prominent object of glorification, be it demigod or deity. In either case, the names are fixed by eternal convention. The first Purana, for example, is named after Brahma, eternally, even though the post is occupied by different jivas in different cycles of creation. The same pattern of eternal scriptures with eternal names with changing speakers or deities is also seen in the Vedic Shrutis. For instance, one branch of the Yajurveda is called Katha, because in each age a rishi names Katha, teaches it, and passes it on to his disciples in succession, the Katakas. Sages named Katha and Aitreya appear in every millennium, and their service is essential to human society. Such Vedic rishis are not exactly authors, but transmitters. They receive mantras in their meditation. With the passage of time, certain Vedic works lose popularity or are entirely forgotten on this planet. Eventually, a sage or demigod reveals it again, and their name becomes attributed to it. An example of such a lost mantra being revived is given in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Satisfied by such glorification, the powerful sun god assumed the form of a horse, Vajirupa, and presented to the sage Yajnavalkya Yajra mantras previously unknown in human society. From these countless hundreds of mantras of the Yajurveda, the powerful sage compiled 15 new branches of Vedic literature. These became known as the Vajrasanayi Samhita because they were produced from the hairs of the horse's mane, and they were accepted in disciplic succession by the followers of Kanva, Madhyandina, and other rishis, 12.6.72-73. Like the Vedas, the Puranas are eternal, yet periodically forgotten. Just as the Lord appears to take birth and disappear like a mortal being, the Vedic literature similarly seems to become manifest and unmanifest. Vyasadeva's spiritual master Narada specifically instructed him to compile the Puranas in the form in which they are now known on earth. In particular, Srimad Bhagavatam had become unmanifest at the end of the Dwapara Yuga 5,000 years ago. The Bhagavatam, however, has to be more than 5,000 years old. How do we know this? Because Puranas we know to be older than the Bhagavatam refer to it by name. In the Uttarakhanda Padma Purana, for example, Gautama advises Ambarish Maharaj, who reigned in the Satyayuga, to study Srimad Bhagavatam. The Puranas are eternal, yet they rise and set like the sun. Just as the Lord comes and goes as he pleases, so too does he speak the Veda through the various sages at his whim. So then, in other words, these they become revealed or they may be lost, and they're revealed again, just like Narada Pancharatra. There is one of the Pancharatras is called Narada Pancharatra. But at the same time, all 108 can be referred to as Narada Pancharatra, because Narada is the one who reveals them when they become lost. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So this principle, who's revealing, then that is getting there. I mean, it's just like America is some Italian guy, right? Just because he bumped into it. Now, there was probably millions of people living there, but, you know, they don't seem to get much credit, right?
Yeah. Seems the Vikings were also there.
Yeah, up north. I wonder what they called it.
Finland. Land of wine.
Land of wine.
They always have such good names. Greenland. Yes. It's like only ice.
I think it was a trick to get people to avoid Iceland. They called Iceland, and Greenland, but it's actually the other way around. Until the Vikings got through with it. There used to be trees. It was forest, Iceland. Uh-huh.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Jaya Bhakti Vrinda ki Jaya. One thing he doesn't bring up, or one thing for, is Svalbard.
Svalbard?
That's part of Denmark.
it was. It's part of Norway now.
Now it's part of Norway.
Norway was part of Denmark 100 years ago.
Oh, I see. So you lost the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. The last 20 wars that Denmark has fought, it has progressively become smaller every time. So that's why we're kind of paranoid with our culture, so-called culture.
Denmark.
Oh, it was huge. Yeah, yeah. Practically every country in Europe has taken up approximately half of Europe, and Denmark also around half.
Yeah, but they took half.
Yeah. Oh, way down in Germany, all of Scandinavia. So that's why we say that the Danes have always done what's right, but only when everything else has failed. We're thorough in that way.
Okay.